Balance of Nature's fruits and vegetables in a capsule, changing the world one life at a time.
I am 73. I work 40 hours a week. I take Balance of Nature pretty much religiously. One day, about 2 weeks ago, I cleaned a house that was 3.5 hours, another one that was 2.5 hours, another one that was 3.5 hours, and then I cleaned a commercial building and then cleaned half of another building. I got home at 10 o'clock at night. And who can do that at 73? Balance of Nature actually gives me quite a bit of energy. It's just amazing that fruits and vegetables could actually fix your problems. I don't have to have like coffee and whatever. I just take these and I have the energy.
Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off on any new preferred order. Call 1-800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code KATE.
Lamar, think while it's still legal. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
You know, we look at the president, we look at what he said, we look at what he might do, we look at his advisors, but quite frankly, there's an outside source which we refer to as a deep state
right.
or a shadow government. There's a lot of influence by people that are actually more powerful than our government itself, our president, and all that. I mean, you take, for instance, how our government gets involved in elections around the world.
Yep.
Involved, and we've done this for more than 50 years, and so that isn't known to the public. Now, yes, Trump is his own guy more so than most of have ever been in before.
Yeah.
We hope he can maintain an independence and then go in the right direction. But I fear the fact that there's so much that can be done secretly out of control of our apparent government and out of the view of so many citizens.
Boy, was he right on. Love Ron Paul. In fact, my interview with Ron Paul is in this hour, and this is going to be fantastic, hopefully, for you to listen to. I asked him a lot of questions, a couple of listener questions as well, like about the Insurrection Act. We had some, and secession were from the listeners. So I asked him a whole bunch of questions. I'm going to go ahead and roll tape because we actually had to record before the show so that because of his time schedule. He is a busy, busy guy, and I absolutely love what he's doing. Marjorie Taylor Greene, I can't believe they're doing that to her. It's amazing to me. And you know, okay, so she's off the committees, but like she said, and she's a congresswoman because she was coming out talking about the fraud. You're not allowed to talk about fraud. That is the buzzword that kills shows and radio personalities and TV people. They will not say the word fraudulent election. But Marjorie Taylor Greene did, and I think she's from Georgia, and they took her off the committees. 11 Republicans and the Democrats took her off. And so the party system is broken, and it is insane what's going on with the censorship. But you're going to love this. So I want to play this first excerpt from my Ron Paul interview. And here we go. Ron Paul, American author, physician, retired politician who served in the U.S. Representative for Texas' 22nd Congressional District and former presidential candidate. Of course, sixth time on the show. I could not be happier. The ultimate freedom fighter. RonPaulInstitute.org, the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity, the Ron Paul Curriculum, Ron Paul Homeschooling, Ron Paul Liberty Report. I mean, I just love everything that you're doing. What a mission you have in life. Are you surprised? I have to get your thoughts on the election, Dr. Paul, and I welcome you to the show. And watching what just took place, what were your thoughts as you were watching what happened with the electoral count and the fraudulent election?
My first thought was thinking about those individuals that I've known for many years in the libertarian movement that says, don't vote.
So true, right?
<cheat.
laughs> Yes.
And I tell the story about the very first race I ran in the 70s. I won a special election, and then shortly thereafter we had a regular election, and I lost about 100 votes. But we identified about 1,300 fraudulent votes, and
wow.
We won all the court battles up until the state judge ruled in favor of me, and then they had a special meeting. They threw the judge out and had a new vote that I did lose the election.
Wow.
So I've known about this, and so I've never placed the law a lot of my efforts on politics, just only to gain some credibility and get an audience. But my goal has always been to see if I could talk with you and others like you about what we think is important. And it wasn't in Washington, so I was never really designed to be a chairman that had power and influence. Mm-hmm. That to me was irrelevant.
When you were representing Texas, did you find anyone that thought the way you did about government that was elected as well?
No, there were always some close, and there were some supporters that were very close, but not many.
Yeah.
And in Washington, you'd have, matter of fact, sometimes it was, a progressive Democrat that was more easily to work with. You know, Dennis Kucinich became a close friend of mine, but he was pretty good on civil liberties. He didn't like the Federal Reserve, and he, liked our foreign policy. And there was a couple Republicans like that. The constitutional Republicans the constitutional conservatives, they're pretty good. But they don't come from the basic principle of nonviolence and non-aggression and apply it to the government. It just seems to be a giant leap to think that you would restrain the government like you restrain individuals. But it seems to me it was very appealing. The one thing I found out is that argument, when presented to college kids when I was running for president, it was very well understood, you know, that liberty was pretty neat, and they had their personal freedom. At the same time, they were allowed to spend their own money as they like, and they were more open to it because they liked civil liberties and they liked the anti-war position. But they were unofficial, and there was some follow-through on that, but that to me is, of course, the most important issue, is understanding the moral principle of freedom.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. You know, had you attained the presidency, do you think you would have been allowed to have done anything significant in there while you were there? I don't know that they would ever let a constitutionalist near the White House, to tell you the truth, but I think the powers that be have it pretty tightly controlled. What's your view on that? Could you have done anything significant in that position? Would you have been allowed to? Would you have just been stopped?
Probably not in the conventional sense, but there would be some things that, because people challenge me, and I was in office for a few years,
right?
And then the opposition would say, "You were in there all that time, and what did you ever pass? How many bills are named after you? How many buildings are named after you?"
Right, right.
They'd ridicule that position. I said, "Well, it's not relevant. I wasn't even trying. That wasn't the purpose." But I introduced a lot of bills because I was trying to make a point, and I was trying to convert people. I wanted to have some intellectual influence on the discussion and introduce ideas. And there I thought I did reasonably well.
Yes.
You know, for instance, I think that compared to 1976 when I was first elected, there's been a lot more interest in understanding about the Federal Reserve and why the Federal Reserve is so important. And so I think it was only in that area. If you did that, but if you said, okay, where I think the problem comes, and what you're inferring is that, okay, you're going to have to veto these bills. And so, if you vetoed every spending bill because every one was probably in violation, that's going to make a lot of angry people.
Right.
And it would be tough, and you wouldn't be able to achieve it in the conventional way. I don't think if I had 4 years there, that all of a sudden the budget would be balanced. That wouldn't be happening, and it would be very, very dangerous. And I've thought of, just in a theoretical way, how would you get the people, to come together? And there are a few ideas that I have, but I think that there would be a lot of anger, and it all depends on how you measure it. You say, well, you persuaded and convinced people, and there's more people interested in the Federal Reserve, I thought we made great progress on, foreign adventurism. Trump still brags about the fact he never started a major war overseas.
Sure.
The other place, before it was popular, in the early 70s and 80s, my position was very strongly about being anti-drug war.
My
district was in the belt, in the Bible Belt, and people say, boy, you can't do that. And some people in Congress, when we'd have a minor vote, and there would be only one or two of us voting for it, people would come up and say, you live in the Bible, they're going to kill you. I'll agree with you, but right. I'm not voting that way. But I think that attitude right now is completely different. We still have a long way to go, but even Trump, pardoned some people that had committed victimless crimes. I think in that area we could have accomplished a lot more. You could really deal with the subject of victimless crime. You wouldn't have to pander to minorities and say how much money you need so that you like me and vote for me.
Sure.
You could say we're going to have equal justice and we mean it, and we're not going to see that the book is thrown at certain groups because they use the drugs more than anybody else. No, I think we made some progress there, but it was slow and tedious. But the big thing of balancing a budget would be very difficult. But I have to admit that even the one thing I think we made progress on is very difficult, because the strong anti-war position, when you're in a position to do something about it, that rouses up the deep state.
Yes.
Just think of the 60s. Boy, the 60s was an awakening decade for me, because both Kennedys were killed. Martin Luther King was assassinated, and it had to do with their position on war. And so that would have been tough, but I know that the young people never held it against me. The college campuses were very acceptable to this. That's where I had a lot of encouragement, the fact that young people would listen and be positive about a definition of liberty from my viewpoint.
Oh, 100%. And the founders, the way that they viewed foreign interference, I mean, I can't believe where the deep state has taken us through the last 4 or 5 decades. It's been amazing to watch those budgets explode as well. What are your thoughts on the Insurrection Act? Maybe why it wasn't declared, and the fraud was so obvious. What do you think about the Insurrection Act?
Are you talking about application to Trump? Or
yes,
exactly what?
Yes.
I think they're just, what they're doing is so miscellaneous, and it was driven, I think what drove it, certainly wasn't legal concerns or proper decorum. I think what drove them, drove the whole deal and continues to do it, I think there was tremendous jealousy over Trump, because he was non-conventional, he was against political correctness, and he was in your face, he was telling people the truth, and this drove the opposition, because they knew that anybody talks like that, he is going to be destroyed within days, and it didn't happen.
Sure.
The more he did it, the more popular he got, and that turned into hate. First, it was jealousy, how well he was doing, and eventually, when they knew they couldn't stop him, they had to hate him, and that's why it began real early on. They sensed that, so even from the beginning of his 4 years, so I don't think they were expecting that they could win it on a technicality. It had to be emotional, it had to be lying, it had to be intimidation, rallying the troops.
We'll be right back. I'm going to come right back, more with Ron Paul, right when I come back, and honestly, there's just so many good parts of this. He has so much to say, can I just tell you? I'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. And katedalyradio.com. More with Ron Paul when I return.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
I know. Shining down like water.
Hi there, welcome back. Kate Daly show, katedalyradio.com. Special Friday show for you. Alan Stevo joins me in the next hour, and Dr. Paul Gooch joins me in the next hour as well to talk about the Republic. We also have Ron Paul in this hour. And so we actually had to pre-tape the interview due to his schedule. And so let me go ahead and start where we had left off. I had talked about the fraudulent election and wanted his 2 cents on that. And also he was talking about what their views on Trump were. Here we go.
First, it was jealousy, how well he was doing. And eventually, when they knew they couldn't stop him, they had to hate him. And that's why it began real early on. They sensed that. So even from the beginning of his 4 years, so I don't think they were expecting that they could win it on a technicality. It had to be emotional. It had to be lying. It had to be intimidation, rallying the troops, rallying the deep state and the media and all these things, which they were very good at. They weren't going to try to prove something in court.
Yes, absolute demonization right now of the middle class white Christian conservative. It seems as though very, very demonized. And I have a feeling that's going to get much worse as we go forward. What would you tell people to do? What do we do? What about secession? What, you know, Texas is, that's come up in conversation, Texas, and right, you're from Texas. So what are your thoughts on that? What do we do?
And because it is very frustrating. And I don't think there's one answer. And I get to ask that question all the time, especially with young people. They might say, boy, this sounds good. I want to do something. Tell me what I should do. I'll run for Congress, and I'm going to get an MD degree and run for Congress and do what you did. I said, no way. That's not what you wanted at all. And I said, but do what you want to do. There's no one thing. I said, everybody has talent. Some people have radio talk shows, you know, and they do very well, and they reach people.
Right.
And you're one of those.
Thank you.
You've reached a lot of people. You probably don't even know how many. I have no idea. I'm amazed that there are people out there I never heard of, and they're doing a lot of good things. So people have a lot of different talents. They can write. They can run for office, but they have to do it for the right reason. If they're running for office because they like it on their resume and they really think they could do some good, but then they get into trouble if that's their sole goal. So this is a big thing on picking what to do. I've had people, you know, write and teach. It'd be great. I'd love to see more people in journalism, you know.
Oh, boy. Wouldn't that be
great? But it's independence. Now, the other thing that I did since leaving Congress that I think is very important, but it's not well known, that is to have a homeschooling program. And it's, right now it happens to be getting more popular because of the chaos in the public school system. And I think that's important. People have talents, and they just should use them. But they'll figure it out, and a lot of them have. That's where I've been impressed with how many different things people have done to promote the freedom message.
Oh, I love what you're doing. I think it's amazing, and I hope they get their kids out of the school system, because when you're going to the school of the Romans, you come out a Roman, and there's no... I mean, it's very, very hard to turn that around. And so they were so blatant about what they were doing as far as perpetrating crime, not only in the election with the COVID narrative and everything. I call 2020 the big lie. You know, everything we've been lied to. And I also say drain the media, not the swamp, the media, because the media provides cover. But are you surprised at how emboldened they've become in basically perpetrating these crimes so obviously? What tipped it to the point where they don't even care anymore? They don't care about any crime that they commit. It's just people are feeling out there that no justice will ever come to these people, and that they get to run the roost now because they've got all three branches of government. So nobody is going to tell them no. We have judges that are bought and sold. We have the Supreme Court. I don't know what they're doing. And so, were you surprised at the? Are they at the point of no return? Is it
at the point of no return? But it's a big job. No, I really wasn't surprised, because I thought that would be the consequence. I thought that's where we go to, because our problem is that too many people don't start their thinking and operation from a moral principle. They don't hold something that they really believe in, and cultural Marxist type people, they have a immoral principle that they cling to, and they're very, very dedicated. And you don't need to have huge numbers. Just look at how, you know, how many are there, 5 to 10 in the Congress? Mm-hmm. And very, very powerful. I see the other day somebody said, do you know that Pelosi really isn't the speaker? AOC is the speaker.
There you go.
It's ideological. Yeah. It is. Mm-hmm. It's a small number of people, and they understood it. So that's the negative. But the positive is that your challenge isn't to go out there and convert 10 million people before you can make any headway. It's to have people in positions of talking about it on radio and writing articles, mm-hmm. and writing books and getting involved in movies and all these things, because the ideas are what's important. Ideas have consequences, and that's what that people have to realize. And it's just a minority that holds those principles. So, but the fact that we have become lackadaisical, our side, mm-hmm. is that I'm not surprised that those who are more aggressive have been very, very successful. So the lackadaisical is a big problem. It's not the enemy, because that's a natural consequence, because they don't. Yeah, I wanted to get a picture, and they had their mask. Ridiculous things like lockdown, mm-hmm. and the idiocy they put the people through.
Right.
And the other night, the first time in a year, my wife and I went out to dinner. Mm-hmm. We met a couple young guys, and they were friendly, and they were really supportive, and they knew me and this sort of thing. But then they wanted to get a picture, and they had their mask. And one of them, I think, either had it on or not. But my wife, it didn't. I was so slow on it, but my wife said, they wanted a picture. My wife said, take off your mask.
Wow.
It's this whole thing that there's so much complacency. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many people really aren't mean and nasty, mm-hmm. and are willing, you know, to really fight these people? But it's just that they're complacent. You know, how many people really will work on it?
Right.
On this mask thing, and it's amazing. That's amazing to me, and it's so discouraging that so many people act like zombies.
Yes.
And by now, they should be standing up. Right now, natural consequences are more helpful to us than people standing up for what they believe in. Because the natural consequences, and we talked about it on our program today, mm-hmm. is, you know, the natural sequence of a virus is there's a lot of natural ways people become immune, mm-hmm. You know, to diseases. And the only thing the enemies are worried about that. We better hurry up, because this thing may be over, and what will we have to scare the people?
Exactly.
You know, this sort of thing. But it's complacency by the people that discourages me more than being totally surprised by what the left is doing, because they don't have it, and they can do so much evil. And you say, well, aren't they concerned about what they've done in kids, or getting sick from it? And they don't have they're not likely to. They're getting sick from the lockdown. So they do this, and they have the supporters of that position have no remorse. They don't feel bad. They have no conscience. They don't have any sense of right and wrong. So the founders warned us about we would have a republic if the people maintain a moral standard, and we don't have that. So I talk about and wrote a little booklet on bankruptcy, the financial bankruptcy, and the moral bankruptcy. And the moral bankruptcy is the worst,
mm-hmm.
because you don't have people willing to stand up. So we shouldn't be surprised at what we're getting, because they have no guilt, and they'll do this. Most people still have a conscience, but if the majority is like I'm hoping, have a conscience, well, why don't they act upon this? You know, they know what's right and wrong, and nobody's going to come along and be a good politician and make sure that the courts all of a sudden are fair and equal. No, you need to have a people who will stand up to this nonsense.
Oh, absolutely. I wonder sometimes if because the masses went for this and continue to go for this, that maybe that's why they were able and really willing to be so blatantly obvious about the fraudulent election and not care that it was done right in front of us. I kind of equated it to watching a murder happen on TV and then they're telling you it didn't happen. And so you're sitting there going, but I just saw it. I know it happened. but you're not allowed to ever talk about it again. And so I wonder sometimes, because the masses went for this for so long, you know, we've been calling it out for a year. It's been a year now, and I can't believe we're at the year mark. And, you know, is there a point where you would say secession would be a way out of this? Or what percentage of the population do you think needs to be educated to save this country from these people that have sort of hijacked it and taken it over?
Well, you never know what the percentage has to be and how much coverage I get. But most people think that major changes have occurred if the leadership, the thought leaders of about 8% of the people, they can change things along, you know, around. And but the whole thing is you can't measure them. I believe in I believe in the remnant. I believe there's all. It used to be. So I think that, but as far as secession goes, I never entertained the thought that what we need is another 1861.
Right.
That's not going to work. They have too many tanks and they have less morality. They would just mow everybody down and drop bombs on everybody, you know, if need
so
be.
True.
So that wouldn't be a good idea. But seceding is getting out of the system.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people who do that.
Individually, right? Individually.
Yeah, individually, mm-hmm. And there's different ways to do it. I think it was Harry Brown that wrote the book, How to Be Free in an Unfree Society, had a few suggestions. Mm-hmm. And I think people who really know what's happening and that it could get a lot worse, and they're not preparing to fight it out with guns in their house when the feds come, that they have to be prepared. And I think, you know, investments are important. Providing a family with some survival technology and how to get along,
mm-hmm.
But that's still a small minority that can do this. It's so tough. When I go over all these things that should be done and could be done, and invest in gold, invest in Bitcoin,
mm-hmm.
short the markets, all this. I said the only thing that is going to improve my survival rate is more people endorsing the principles of liberty.
You're so correct. Wow. I'll be right back with more with Ron Paul, my visit with Ron Paul. And he's just such a true patriot. You know, I've done a lot of interviews, probably over 300 a year, at least, if not 400. And he is one of my all-time top five, top three interviews, because he is extremely honest. He'll just tell you where he stands and doesn't worry about the rest. I love that about him. And what a feat he has accomplished in the education of people. I know that he had tremendous influence on me almost a decade ago, starting on this show. His views are right on the money. Be right back with Ron Paul. Don't go anywhere. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Do you feel the world is broken?
We do.
Do you feel the shadows deepen?
We do.
Hi there.
Do you know that all
Welcome back. Kate Daly Show, and happy to have you. Also, my interview with Ron Paul. We had to pre-tape the interview, and he's always amazing. His sixth visit on the show. Before I go to the rest of that interview, I just wanted to mention, get over to Balance of Nature. Make sure that you're ordering the product. I know I say this every day, but I am telling you, the product is it's amazing. You'll love it, and you will feel healthier taking it. You'll know. You'll notice the difference. It's quite noticeable. So make sure you go to Balance of Nature. .com, and then of course put in the code Kate, and when you put in the code Kate, you'll get 35% off and free shipping. It's amazing. Balanceofnature.com, and you'll even get a free health coach. It's pretty cool. Okay, the rest of the interview with Ron Paul. Here you go.
Principles of Liberty.
You're so correct. I absolutely 100%. How did you feel about more parties cropping up? The Patriot Party, all these different parties. We have the Constitution Party. How do you feel about all a new party? Because I remember even when the Tea Party started to emerge, I thought they put, you know, Newt Gingrich in there to kind of steer it into a certain direction so we would never hear from it again. But what are your thoughts on parties?
The new more parties. The merrier, mm-hmm. The more they express themselves in with a view that's in our direction, the better. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to change in the conventional way. I mean, I've supported and watched and hoped about it, and was involved in the Libertarian Party, mm-hmm. but it really hasn't caught on, you know.
Right.
Yeah, they've had a lot of opportunities to do it. But I still encourage them. But sometimes when I've reached out to them in recent years, mm-hmm. there wasn't a lot of support.
Interesting.
You know, saying, come on over and help us and do these things. But but it's still good. I think that the word libertarian is still a good word. I think mm-hmm. the majority of people don't want to run against libertarianism, except who was it that mentioned the other day? It was the former CIA agents. We got to go after the libertarians, too.
Right. It's interesting because now it's extremism. Anything against the narrative, and they even want a reality czar now. So I just can't imagine where they're going to go next if this is their first 2 weeks at it. And I think most of the nation is just silent, not knowing what to do. And here we are, the majority. So, and I'm really proud of Rand Paul, Senator Paul, for speaking up, at least asking questions about the COVID narrative or all the different the lies we've been told. So it really is going to have to be getting out of the brainwashing and propaganda, I guess. We're just going to have to figure that out.
I think he's doing a good job, and his mm-hmm. voice is heard, and it doesn't get the attention. Of course, it doesn't fit the scenario of
sure.
the people who own Main Street media. So, but there's the conditions are such that we can still reach out. When I left Congress, one of my last statements was the most precious thing that we could do to try to change this thing around is an understanding and a protection of the First Amendment. So if we're allowed to express ourselves, then we can work on persuasion. But right now, it's getting tougher and tougher.
Yes,
it
is.
You get blackballed pretty fast if you don't use the right words.
That is
That's
so true.
Bad.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a guest from East Germany that escaped East Germany and under that rule, and he said, you know, people in groups of 10 started gathering at homes, and that's how they became educated. And I absolutely agree that it has to be a groundswell movement of people getting together in small groups to educate. And I love what you're doing. Tell people where they should go. What's the best place to find you and all the messages that you have about liberty?
Well, the Ron Paul Liberty Report is something I do live stream every day.
Mm-hmm.
But if I may, what I'd like to suggest, if you don't care, is
sure.
if people are really interested in following what I'm doing and what one of my goals have been is to build my homeschooling, and they would have to go to ronpaulcurriculum.com.
Mm.
And
I would love that
can be very helpful. I think it's getting information to these young people.
Mm-hmm.
So important.
Absolutely. And, while you educate their parents at the same time, hopefully
you know,
the whole family.
That does happen too.
Yes, I hope so. Ron Paul, it's always a pleasure to have you, and I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. Good to be with
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. I love it. He was so fun to talk to. We talked for a little bit after, and I thank him for granting me the time. Usually his interviews are pretty short, and he granted me extra time, and he always does. It's just, he's a really, really superb patriot.
I really enjoyed that. I'm over.
I know, right? I have Dr. Paul Guchin with me. And, we've had long conversations about the Republic and about how to save the Republic and what are we going to do next? Because I know so many, the majority in America knows the fraud happened. So you're not crazy. You know the fraud happened. It was blatant. You know that the whole thing behind the COVID thing and it's a lot of the lies that are being told. And even on a hot mic, the press corps, saying, oh, 1.5, that's like the flu. That's the flu numbers. Oh, yeah, that's the flu. Yeah, on hot mic. Anyway, so we have all of this stuff going on, and how do we get the country back? There was a clip you had Paul. And this was about, this was John Wayne,
let's
right?
Play that. Let's play that.
Here we go.
Time is running out. I feel I must postpone this interview until we can be assured of no further interruptions.
Step down off your high horse, mister. You don't get lard less than you boil a hog. Have one of these cigars. I brought them all the way from New Orleans. Were you going to tell my Tennesseans that a good many men, sound men all, had a plot to ease the suffering of the people in these parts? Or were you going to tell them that Steve Austin, Houston, and others, and you too, Travis, had planned to declare for a republic? To declare this the Republic of Texas? Were you going to tell them that, Travis?
I hadn't thought this was generally known.
It isn't yet. Not till Austin separates the sheep from the goats. Not till he decides who's on the right side. Republic. I like the sound of the word. It means people can live free, talk free, go or come, buy or sell, be drunk or sober, however they choose. Some words give you a feeling. Republic is one of those words that makes me tighten the throat. Same tightness a man gets when his baby takes his first step, or his first baby shaves and makes his first sound like a man. Some words can give you a feeling that make your heart warm. Republic is one of those words.
What a great clip.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. I love John Wayne.
Such a favorite for me. But there's a feeling attached to the word republic, which we know instinctively. I think a lot of us, there's something to it. Like we know we have a republic, but we just don't quite know what it means, which is right. Why we're talking about these things today.
Yep.
You know, as a physician, this makes me want to say, I know what the prescription is to fix this mess.
Right.
And it's a couple of structural reforms. I mean, there's probably a lot of things you could do, but a couple of structural reforms. One would be to replace the income tax system with the fair tax. The other would be to get rid of the 17th Amendment so we could put that layer of republicanism back in place. And then it would be for all 50 states, people to get together and learn what our founding fathers meant when they gave us the promise of republican forms of government in our states. And it's gone everywhere. Like we need to put republican forms of government back in, but people got to go back and learn what that means. So that's the second part of the prescription. And the third part of the prescription is we have got to return to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who's the author of all of it.
Right.
So, but the really important structural
and I think
parts
the,
of it
you
is
were talking,
how we relate to each other republicanly, not the party, but how we live the habits and attitudes of
self-rule
that are tied to it. So anyway.
So true, because it is. It's hard to define what a republic is. And at the same time, we've had this gift of it for so long that we kind of started just really enjoying ourselves instead of protecting the gift, right? And like you said, the definition of a republic is a covenant.
Right. So James Wilson said something really interesting. He says, let us ransack the records of history. And it's from the ancient language of our founding, not that ancient, but, you know, our founding father's generation. It's from that language that all of this kind of emerges. So during the first hour, we talked about who did our founding fathers look to for an example of how to run a republic. And the dead example is the Old Testament. I mean, they looked a lot to the law of Moses and how the Israelites organized to come up with the functional parts of a republic, but they had a living example. The living example was the Iroquois Nation. And Ben Franklin got to be friends with Chief Canisataga of the Iroquois. Chief Canisataga, made the case that the success of the Iroquois had to do with the fact that they had the strength of unity, but their organizational structure protected the rights of the individual polities, the individual tribes. That was the magic. It was the organizational structure. And so we were so impressed. I'm going to share this again.
Sure.
the Continental Congress sent a delegation to the Iroquois, I think August of 1775, and they had a meeting with the Indians in Albany, New York, and they, this is direct quote, you can find this in written out of history by Senator Mike Lee. They said, "We're going to rekindle the ancient council fire, renew the covenant, and brighten every link of the chain." That's the language they used to describe to the Iroquois. Here's what we're doing in the creation of this republic.
And it was brilliant.
That ancient language is so powerful. It's so powerful. And we talked earlier about if we had to condense the definition of a republic down to one word, it, that word would be covenant. But it's because of the dual incentive structure in place. And the actual organizational thing is a way of nominating candidates to, for elected office. It's a neighborhood delegate-driven, vet the candidates
system. Put more thought into it than just pulling a lever on a machine.
Right. It's actually a layer of representation that's a non-governmental layer of representation. Sure. It's the delegates that come out of the neighborhoods that make sure that the candidates who get on the ballot have been vetted properly. That's the connected control that makes self-rule or self-government happen. And we don't have that anywhere anymore. And so even though we have all the other trappings of a republic, the functional part, the master link that holds it together, that's what's gone. It's gone in all 50 states. And you got to go back out there and you got to go to your state and you got to figure out how to put that master link back in place.
It might start with living room discussions and it might start with gatherings and really going after the foundation.
And the thing is, you know, the control structure that's in place now, the corrupt control structure in place, it's a threat to it, of course. There's no way you're going to make these changes without
alarming
the system knowing.
Sure, sure.
And that's based on experience here in Utah because the control structure that destroyed our Republican layer. I've been involved in the fight to try to save ours, and it ain't happening.
Well, I think about how much time we spend individually. Before I was doing this for a living and all the hours of study I put in, the tens of thousands of hours, you know, how much did I do to protect liberty? Like, how much did I invest time in to learning or protecting it or doing anything? Not much. I can't even remember spending any time for like a decade of my life in my 30s, and I can't even remember.
Well, we've had so much relative ease, you know?
Yes, yes. And we thought everything was fine, except that the last 50, 60 years has been this quiet coup taking over the republic. But we weren't realizing it because not everything they were doing was hitting us directly. We were all feeling taxes. We're all feeling all this stuff going on, but not to the point where it's going to hit you so hard that you're sitting in your house and the government tells you can't come out and you can't go to work like this year, you know, like last year, you know.
Right.
Then people went, wait a minute, what's going on?
Well, there is this problem, too, that the productive class, I mean, the people who really pay the taxes to make everything happen, we're really, really busy.
Yeah.
I mean, I get up in the morning and I go to work. I have a clinic to run.
It's a challenge.
I have patients to see.
It's a challenge.
I'm exhausted. My brain's
life
used
is a
up.
Challenge.
By the time I get done at the end of the day, then I go home and.
And I understand that. And I think I kind of had my head down raising my family. And then you start to realize, oh gosh, what are my kids going to have? What are my kids going to get? They're going to get a lot of confinement. They're going to get a lot of censorship. They're going to get all these things. And how do we change that?
But if we had our neighborhood councils.
Yes. And we had meat and we were educated.
And we were
educated.
Living
then we could turn things around.
Of self-rule, right?
Yep. We'll be right back with Alan Stevo. And he wrote a terrific book, by the way, about masks. And you got to get the book. It's fantastic. And then more with Paul. We're going to come back to this. And you're welcome to call in and give your 2 cents. We'd love to hear from you on the Kate Daly Show. KateDalyRadio.com. Go there for all the podcasts. And of course, visit Balance for Nature, Balance of Nature. Be right back on the show.
Balance of Nature is fruits and vegetables in a capsule, changing the world one life at a time.
I am 73. I work 40 hours a week. I take Balance of Nature pretty much religiously. One day, about 2 weeks ago, I cleaned a house that was 3.5 hours, another one that was 2.5 hours, another one that was 3.5 hours, and then I cleaned a commercial building and then cleaned half of another building. I got home at 10 o'clock at night. And who can do that at 73? Balance of Nature actually gives me quite a bit of energy. It's just amazing that fruits and vegetables could actually fix your problems. I don't have to have like coffee and whatever. I just take these and I have the energy.
Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off on any new preferred order. Call 1-800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code KATE.